everybody, and welcome to What's the Story podcast. This is WTS 307, and my name is Daniel Joseph Morty, the first.
And I am Graham Sean Raymond Merrigan, the first.
How are you, Graham Sean Raymond?
Did you include your confirmation name there?
We didn't.
Grant. Because then I'd have to add Dennis.
Jesus, that's a, quite a mouthful, Graham. I'm sure you've
Graham, heard. Sean, Raymond, Dennis, Merrigan. Thank you.
Very good. I noticed how you just plowed straight through there and you were like, I'm not letting them get a mouthful joke in this early.
No, exactly.
Oh, no, Jared. It's all right, man. How are you, my friend? Are you well?
I'm good. Yeah, very good. You?
Excellent, man. I'm in great form because we're off to the movies this week.
We are off to the movies. I watch in the morning. I work 7 to 3. I stick on the telly in the morning. And on Ireland AM weekly, great movie reviewer comes on the screens, and I mostly always agree with him. And I said to you there a couple of weeks ago, might have been before Christmas actually initially. So I'd love to list. I'd love to get that chap on the podcast, and we did. So did this week we talk all things movies, Oscars, remakes, TV shows, streamings, with the brilliant Brian Lloyd. Joining us now is movie reviewer Brian Lloyd. How are you, Brian?
How are you?
Good, good. We got there after a few technical issues on my part, so apologies about that.
No worries.
Yeah, you've been on our list for a good while, Brian. I always watch it on Ireland AM, the odd occasion on the 6 o'clock show. I listen to you on News Talk, so I'm actually a bit of a fan.
Oh, cheers, man. That's very weird to hear. Thank you.
Did you say that's very weird?
It is, yeah. No, it's I don't know what it is, but it gets very weird when people say, oh yeah, yeah, I watch it on thing, and I'm like, stop, I don't tell me that. I can't get in my head about that. Like, it's, I don't want to be perceived like.
Well, I usually take your reviews as gospel, so when
oh jeez, don't do that. Whatever you do, Christ.
I only mean as in like, oh, I'm definitely gonna watch this now. Now, I was always gonna watch. I'm a huge professional wrestling fan, so I was always gonna watch the Iron Claw, and so I loved your review for that. But obviously, remember I messaged you and I was saying
yes,
it was. I found it mad in that they left Chris Van Erich out of it, and. Like, I still feel that, even though I listened to the director and he was saying, oh, we didn't want to add another tragedy. Does it not mean anything that the actual tragedy is real life?
See, this is the thing. Like, I mean, I was watching, I remember watching, and I like yourself, like, I've been into professional wrestling for years. Like, and like, I don't think, like, any kind of film, I think, or any TV show or anything that's an adaptation, like, there's always going to be, you're either going to have to kind of tidy up the story just to make it flow better and make it more sort of, I guess, in a conventional structure.
Yeah.
But in the case of the Iron Claw, I remember reading the review or reading interviews that, the guy did, Sean Durkin, he was basically saying audiences wouldn't believe it. They wouldn't believe how terrible this story was. The fact that there was another brother and all the rest of it. And yeah, I mean, I don't, like, the effect and the impact of everything that happened to the Von Erichs was there already. I don't know how one more death in the family would have communicated it any better. Do you know that sort of way? Like, it was so total and so kind of all encompassing that another dead brother on top of it, I don't think would have impacted it, you know?
Yeah, it's like I was telling people that watched it that aren't wrestling fans and they wouldn't have known Eric's. I was saying to them, you know, there was another brother that died, and they're kind of going, why didn't they include that? Kind of judging it in as far as why didn't they include that, you know?
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know, because they obviously had the younger brother who was 3 or 4 that passed, and they did include him. I just felt it was mad to leave someone who was like 21 who was also a wrestler. Just not mention them is nuts, I thought.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I don't think it was the lesser story for it. I didn't think any less of them for doing it. I understood the reasons for it. I understand why some people have a problem with it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think the story was as well executed as it could have been without having that element of it, you know, that kind of way. Like, I mean, that's the thing. It's an adaptation of the story. It's not going to be, if you wanted to watch the full complete story of it, you know, there's a great documentary series, you probably know it, Dark Side of the Ring.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that episode about the Von Erichs is goes through everything in, you know, real detail about it. So, yeah. You know.
Yeah. I went back and I watched the YouTube interview. I think it's the last interview with the father.
Yeah.
It's 27 minutes long and it's just mad. It's just mad on reflection when you're kind of, when you watch The Dark Side of the Ring, when you watch The Iron Claw, and then you see the interview, and I think he was portrayed brilliantly in as far as that he was just your stereotypical Christian Southern father.
Yeah.
who was obsessed with the business. How did you feel another criticism of mine, now I love the film, so I don't want to put the,
yeah, yeah.
I absolutely loved it and I'd easily watch it again. The Von Erichs were superstars in Texas. Do you think that was portrayed right?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And in fact, as well, there's a mate of mine who is from Texas. He's a film editor. And he was saying he distinctly remembers going to see Kerry Von Erich when he was a kid in the Von Erichs,
wow,
that arena that they had. He says, I remembered it really, really well. Like, they were huge. They were like massive, massive celebrities in Texas. Like, they were known far and wide. Like, and I think they got that really well, definitely. Like, they, and that's, like I said, that's from a guy who
lived it.
Was there at that time, who maybe didn't know the Von Erichs personally, but like was familiar with them, had gone to see them wrestle and stuff like that. So yeah, I think they got that very, very well.
I think the casting was really good in that film, though,
wasn't it?
I thought Jeremy Allen White and Zac Efron were absolutely brilliant in it, in fairness. Like, and I think Jeremy Allen White, now I'll admit I'm a bit of a fanboy on him because of the Bear. It's absolutely
oh yeah, same, great. Same.
But I just thought like he was really, really good in it, and that for me was a massive help, because I wasn't sure what to expect. Like, because like that, you know, I knew who the Von Erichs were. I saw the Dark Side of the Ring episode. I remembered as a kid, you know. Like, I remember when my brother told me Texas Tornado, as I knew him from watching WWF back in the day. You know, he's only got one foot. I was like, no, he doesn't. Shut up. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, kind of thing. So then watching that movie, and I have to say, I thought the cast were brilliant in it.
I thought David was brilliant. Harris Dickinson, I thought he was excellent as well.
Wasn't he? Yeah, no, it was brilliant. Like, I have to say, like, I think out of all of them, I really do think Zac Efron blew it out of the park. Like, and I'm amazed. I am absolutely disgusted that it didn't get, not, I mean, look, not that the Oscar is any kind of barometer for what makes a good movie, because there's been plenty of shit that got to the Oscars that had absolutely no business being there. Case in point being King Richard the year before last with Will Smith.
Wasn't it?
It was a ball. Like, I remember going to the press screening and that, and just being like, bet you fucking, I'll give you 20 quid right now. Put 20 quid on it. That thing is going to be all over the Oscars. You'll probably see Will Smith getting a Best Actor nomination for it. Yeah. I did not think he'd win it. I thought, like, some kind of, I don't know, you know, justice will prevail or something like that. But then, and it's kind of like how Sandra Bullock won for The Bright Side. It's just sort of like, okay, well, you've had a great career up to this point, so we're going to just give you that on the basis of this, you know?
Yeah.
But in the case of like Zac Efron with Iron Claw, just that film in general, like the way it was shut out of the Oscars felt very, very pointed to me. Like, did even the song didn't get a look in as well, which I thought was ridiculous.
And is there any particular reason for that, or is it just
theories,
the Oscars being snobby?
I think there's an element of snobbiness, and I think the fact that, like, if you remember, it was a few years ago when Meryl Streep at the Golden Globes, and she passed some comment about, you know, we need to support the arts and all the rest of it, and if we don't support the arts, we're just going to have UFC and wrestling, and that's not art. And that really kind of on the one hand, you had people like Dana White and all those UFC people saying, oh, this is all the fucking libs. This is what they're all, this is what they all think of us, blah, 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 blah. But then on the other flip side of it, you had a lot of people being like, well, yeah, no, they're right. Like, yeah, you know, wrestling and UFC isn't art. I don't think anybody was trying to say that UFC or wrestling is art. Like, no one's trying to make that comparison. But I do think there's probably an element of the fact that this was a movie about wrestling, or at least wrestling was the framing device, was the way into this story, made people kind of turn their noses up at it a bit when they shouldn't have at all. Like, because there are so many, like, and I said this in the review, like, this could have easily been about a family of doctors. This could have easily been a family about fucking railway engineers. It could have been anything. It just happened to be about wrestling, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's it. That's like, in a clunky kind of segue towards like Oscars and that kind of thing, it is, like, I think it's one of the criticisms that's always put out there, that it's a bit snobby and it does kind of tend to look down the nose at certain subject matter or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And then when you
it's funny though, because Mickey Rourke got he got nominated, didn't he, for Best Actor?
For The Wrestler, yeah. Yeah, true. But like, that was Darren Aronofsky, and that was, you know, again, kind of like what I was talking about with Sandra Bullock. It was sort of like, that nomination is a recognition of their career, like, you know, that kind of way. And like,
okay,
a lot of actors kind of do kind of, they do think that way, that like, well, you know, they can't take away a nomination and stuff like that. And that in and of itself is enough of a recognition, you know?
Like, so with the Oscars thing, because the big kind of, you know, the uproar this time round was the snubbing of Barbie, which,
yeah,
you know, along with Oppenheimer, basically was the entire cinema schedule last summer. You
yeah.
Know, the Barbenheimer effect. I went about, I enjoyed about, I genuinely thought Barbie was great crack. I loved it.
Mm.
But yeah, like, when you see it in a film that's so commercially successful, and, you know, for many people was the movie of the year, about culturally and everything else, like, and then, you know, well, I'm Just Ken, or sorry, no, Billie Eilish's number gets the number point of it. Like,
it's, I don't know, like, it's strange, to be honest, because I think, like, and again, this is probably getting very, very inside football now, but like, I think a lot of people, the reason why Disney, or the reason why Barbie didn't do as well with the Oscars, I think, was it was kind of the Academy and the members, if you like, Warner Brothers, because Warner Brothers basically had, they've been going through this thing where they've essentially been parking films, or they've been refusing to release certain films because they're basically getting tax write-offs on them.
Really?
And there was this film. Yeah. You still there?
Yeah.
Oh shit. Sorry. Sorry. Just the thing dropped off. Sorry. I wasn't sure. But yeah, where was it? Yeah. So Warner Brothers. Yeah. They basically have been parking films and refusing to release them. Right. And there was two films in the last year and a half that Warner Brothers had literally finished and were ready to release, and then they decided not to. One was Batgirl, and the other was this film called Acme versus Coyote. And it was basically this sort of live action slash animated film where Wile E. Coyote, that's brilliant, He took a lawsuit against Acme Corporation. You know the way you used to watch Roadrunner, and he'd have he basically took a lot. Wile E. Coyote takes a lawsuit against Acme Corporation because all of the shit that he bought over the years has constantly failed.
Brilliant. I didn't even know, like, I heard that the Batgirl went all right, but I didn't know.
Yeah.
That probably speaks to the whole thing with them just canning these movies. Because
that's it.
And that's insane. Like,
that's mental, but
That actually sounds like a good film as well.
Yeah, as well as that with Barbie, though. Didn't Barbie take in like $1 billion?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It did. You know, it completely, like, it was the biggest film. It's the biggest film in the Irish box office, I think, for the last, I think it was either 12 years or 18 years or something like that. It's insane. Like, and then on top of that as well is the fact that, like, Warner Brothers has been in the shit financially wise. for the last couple of years, and Barbie really did save them.
Yeah.
But in terms of the Oscars and stuff like that, like, the reality of it is that the Academy is made up of, you know, actors and writers and directors and stuff like that. So studio executives, studio presidents or whatever, they don't really get a say in it. So this is as much a slap to Warner Brothers. It's not necessarily a dig at Greta Gerwig or Margot Robbie or even Ryan Gosling or anything like that. This is really an admonition of what Warner Brothers has been doing up until this point. At least that's what I think in it, because there's no other logical explanation I can come up with as to why Barbie got snubbed so badly. Like, I mean, the production design of it was incredible. I thought Margot Robbie was brilliant. I cannot understand how Greta Gerwig didn't get Best Director nomination for it. Yeah, there were so many things where I was like, it should at least get this, and it didn't get it. Like,
yeah, it's awesome, but it, and I suppose, not quite to the same tune, but like, when you look at those films, that they bring audiences nothing but joy. They are massive, massive commercial successes, and they, you know, culturally, they absolutely make an impact as well. Like, the entire kind of Marvel Avengers, and particularly up around Endgame and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I know you're never going to see superhero movies unless it's in special effects or costume or something like that. But when you look at the success of it, and again, like, that part of the reason this year's Oscars were kind of, you know, some people were applauding, it's because Robert Downey Jr. finally got his nod. But, you know, most people, when you say Robert Downey Jr., they think Iron Man.
Yeah.
Like, it's so, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where do you hold the Oscars, Brian? Do you hold it in high regard or?
Not really. Yeah. Not really. Like, I've been following it now professionally for the last like 10 years. And what strikes me about it is that it's very much, it's on rails. Like, the thing is on rails. By the time it gets to the Oscar night, generally speaking, you can follow pretty much exactly what's going to win and not what's not going to win. And, you know, like, the whole thing of like Oscar bait films and stuff like that. Like, I mean, that's still a trope. That's still a genre that holds a lot of weight with Academy voters, you know? And, you know, I don't know, to be honest, I don't. Like, I've seen, this is just because I see everything. Like, I've seen so many brilliant, brilliant films be completely ignored by the Oscars. And it's happened enough times now that I'm just like, I don't really, like, I mean, you know, for my job and everything else, like, for doing radio and TV and for entertainment.ie or whatever, like, yeah, fine. I have to pay attention to it and stuff like that. Yeah. I have to write about it. I have to kind of read up on it and what have you. But for myself, I find it's rarely, rarely a barometer of what is a great film. Like, I mean, this year, sure, Oppenheimer was brilliant. Cillian Murphy absolutely deserved. This is a rare year. I mean, I think back to Green Book. I think back to King Richard. I think back to, go back into the 2000s and stuff like that. Shakespeare in Love, for example. Like, there are plenty of films that had absolutely no business being in the Oscars, but through skillful manipulation, campaign, and you name it. Like, the amount of skullduggery that goes into the Oscars to just get nominations and stuff like that. Like, it's pretty overt. Like, and, like, you know, there was that controversy a few years ago with the Golden Globes and the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, and how, you know, the likes of Netflix and Amazon were basically sending the Hollywood Foreign Press Association journalists off in these, like, junkets and, you know, putting them up in 5-star hotels and this, that, and the other. Like, the same pretty much happens with the Oscars, like, not to that extent, but they really do, like, you see it on, like, a lot of trade Bible websites like Deadline and Variety and all these places. Like, they literally have ads for their films, like, for your consideration, best actor, best actress, best whatever. And it's all the studios buy up that ad space and stuff like that. So it's very commercial. It's a lot more commercial, and it's a lot more political. And I say political, I mean in the sense of, like, kind of, you know, outlets and actors and agencies and stuff like that all kind of play play with it. Like, kind of, you know, there's a lot of kind of pussyfooting underneath the table that goes on that I think general audiences aren't aware of, you know?
In a bid to kind of, I'm almost trying to counterbalance that sort of sexism, you know what I mean? I'm one for, unashamedly now, I'm one for those schmaltzy kind of feel-good films and feel-good TV. So I watched one recently that
yeah, we all are, Danny.
Listen, you just sometimes you just want to switch it on, and then at the end of it, feel like you're a little. Just feel like the world's a little bit of a better place. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And I watched one recently that I was expecting absolutely nothing from. It was kind of just a random one. Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris.
Oh my God, I fucking love that.
Isn't that amazing?
Leslie Manville, brilliant.
Absolutely. Just the just genuinely, when it was over, I was sorry it was over. And I just went, you know what? I feel like 10 times better after watching it.
Isn't it? I love that film. And I remember seeing that. And again, exact same as yourself. Was like, all right, fuck it, I'll give this a go. Sat down. And I was like, Leslie Manville, I mean, she's good. Like, I mean, Phantom Thread, great film. And, you know, yeah, fuck it, I'll give it a go. And walked out of it. And I was like, that was just, there is a weight off my shoulders. This is just, yeah, no, I totally agree. That's, and I, there you go. Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris.
Yeah.
Didn't get not a look in when it came to BAFTAs, when it came to any of the Oscars, any of that kind of thing. And there is a film, to my mind, that absolutely deserves a mention. There was another film as well. If you like that kind of thing, I'll recommend one for you.
Hopefully. That's what I was going to ask you. Have you got
one? Yeah. It's called The Duke. Jim Broadbent and Helen Mirren is in it.
Yes, I'm aware of it, but I haven't watched it yet. This is is it a World War II kind of guy?
Kinda, yeah. Fifties UK. It's basically about this owl lad who steals this painting, and he basically holds it to ransom until the Tory government agrees to make TV licenses. give OAPs an exemption for TV licenses and stuff like that. And it's brilliant. If you loved Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris, I am guaranteeing you will love The Duke.
Definitely
watch that.
Definitely, they're on the list now. That's lovely. Love that was uplifting.
You know, that's all you want, though. It's just that it's the same reason. I know some people kind of went, you know, Ted Lasso was too schmaltzy, but it was for that exact reason that I loved Ted Lasso. You couldn't help but kind of feel good after watching it, at least for me, you know.
Did you not feel the third season was a bit of a letdown, though, no?
I felt like they got to the point, like two seasons would have been perfect.
Yeah.
It was almost like, you know, I know, didn't Jason Sudeikis say something like they had always planned for it to be three seasons? I don't know. I felt like they kind of, you know, we might as well keep this cash cow.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a lot with TV lately, where I'm kind of saying, oh, I loved it, but they probably did an episode or two too much.
Yeah.
Like Dope Sick, I thought was good, but it could have been maybe two episodes shorter. Thought it was a bit long, maybe. The last thing I loved, really loved, was that Kate Winslet won Mayor of Easttown, is that
Mayor of Easttown, yeah.
I love that. Yeah, no, I thought that was really good.
I watched the first two episodes of her new one, The Regime.
I haven't seen that.
Have you seen any of that yet, Brian?
I haven't actually, would you believe, and it's on my list. I have to get to it at some point. I've heard kind of middling things about it. Is any use?
For me, I don't think I'll be going back to it. It would have to be a rainy day with nothing else to do kind of thing for me to kind of go on, I'll see what the next episode is about. But like, I just thought, it's HBO, Kate Winslet, this is going to be good. Mm-hmm. And after two episodes, I was like, am I bleeding watching?
Yeah. I was like that with, there's a show on Apple TV at the minute called Palm Royale.
Yes.
With Kristen Wiig, and it's kind of set in like Florida in the 60s. It kind of has a bit of a Catch Me If You Can, Mad Men kind of vibe. But I watched because I had to watch it for Ireland AM, like, you know. And I watched like two, three episodes of it. And I was like, I should fucking love this. This should be right up my alley. Like, and it's a great cast and stuff like that, but it just wasn't hitting me. And I think it kind of goes to what you were saying, Graham, is that like there are certain shows, like there is, like, I mean, there's an industry term for this. It's called Netflix bloat. Where, no, yeah, it's
Jesus.
Yeah, look it up. TVtropes.org. Look it up. It's a thing.
That's mental, isn't it? And it's that's an insult to Netflix. Like
it is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And yeah, it was because they were particularly, like, you go back and look at, like, and this has gone back a while now, but you go back and look at something like House of Cards or Orange is the New Black or even like Daredevil and stuff like that. Like, there was always like, there were the episode, the seasons were always like between 8 to 12 episodes. And generally speaking, about 4 of them were complete filler. They were just in there just to kind of make up the numbers. And that's not necessarily a bad thing because, like, you think back to, like, you know, Friends or Law and Order or Frasier, like before streaming, like those, or Star Trek even, like those episodes, like they had to crank out like 22 episodes a season.
Yeah.
So the reality of it was that at least 10 of them were like, we're just spinning the wheels here. We're just literally just trying to get from one end of the show to the other kind of thing. Now, it's not to say that they couldn't have brilliant episodes in it. And, the, you know, even that notion of we've just got to fill the airwaves, come up with something. And that can lead to really out there, you know, really experimental episodes and stuff like that. Like,
yeah. But when you saw the quintessential bottle episode pop up in any series, you couldn't
know
what was going on. Like,
that was it. Yeah. And like Community, if you ever watched Community, like they used to do that. Yeah, it was like close the doors. We're having a bottle episode. Like,
aren't they make this? That there's a movie signed on for that, isn't there?
There is. Yeah, there is. I'm looking forward to that. I have to really look forward to that.
Will Chevy be involved?
I wouldn't think so. Jesus, no. I mean, considering Joel McHale came out and admitted that the two of them used to beat the shit out of each other on set. Did you see that? Did you?
Oh, I didn't actually know.
He was on. Joel McHale was on that podcast. Oh God, that your man Lex Luthor from Smallville, his podcast.
Right.
I can't remember his name now. I'm completely blanking on it. But Joel McHale was on it, and they were basically talking about how he talked about how Chevy Chase was. I mean, this is well documented, like, but that Chevy Chase was a complete dickhead on set and just didn't get on with Dan Harmon, who was the creator of Community.
Yeah.
But that Joel McHale and Chevy Chase used to literally beat each other up on set. Like, they used to literally get into fist fights and stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah, apparently. Yeah.
Holy shit.
That's insane, isn't it?
I don't believe it.
He did leave after a couple of seasons, didn't he?
Yeah, he was having that much trouble with Dan Harmon that he just left. Like, but I could believe it because Joel McHale, like, he's a tall lad. Like, he's about like 6'2", and Chevy Chase was tall as well. Like, I could see the two of them scrapping, like, you know.
That is mental.
That's mad.
He kind of just brings controversy everywhere in his last kind of 15 or so years.
Doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. There's so much with streaming now, Ryan. There's so much to choose from in terms of TV shows, movies and stuff. But are we getting the same quality? Is that a bad thing? Like, do you think?
I think we are. Yeah. Like, I mean, there's that thing of like the, you know, the prison of choice, like, you know, that sort of way, this idea that, like, we have, you know, however many streamings, like, at no point in history has there ever been more entertainment, right? Because think about it, you have literally, you know, decades and decades of film and television that is pretty much, even if you don't use torrent and or you know, dodgy box or whatever, that are is available to watch right now with the press of a button. And then on top of that as well, you have film studios trying to keep up with streaming services trying to outperform terrestrial television. Like, you're just being constantly bombarded with it. And, like, you know, the reality of it is that, like, you're going to have a situation where people are just cranking the wheel just to make something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And is it the same case with remakes then? Do we need remakes?
No, no, we don't at all. Absolutely not. Like, I mean, before, the only reason you would see a remake is because, you know, the if it was something like, I don't know, Clash of the Titans, for example, right? Like the one in the 80s with your man from LA Law, Harry Hamlin and stuff like that. the special effects looked terrible. Do you know what I mean? They looked absolute shit. And then you had the one with Sam Worthington, and the CGI has you know, reached a point now where if it, whatever about it looking convincing, it just looks better. But the story itself was no better or no worse than the original. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the only way I think remakes should exist in my mind is if, is it actually saying something different? Is it taking a different approach? Is it actually,
yeah,
is it interacting with the original? And I don't say being better or being more of the original. I'm just saying, does it take something from the original and change it? And like, in the case of like, and this applies to sequels as well, and the best example I would give of that is Terminator 1 and Terminator 2. Because not only did you have Arnold Schwarzenegger basically becoming, you know, again, using wrestling talk, going from heel to babyface, but, you know, Sarah Connor, Linda Hamilton's character, went from your stereotypical horror final girl, you know, being chased around the foundry by the Terminator, to taking charge of her life and becoming this, like, you know, almost sinister how she went about it. Like, she was just completely single-minded and traumatized by what she'd experienced in the first one, you know? And like, Halloween did that as well. Like, the recent Halloweens with Jamie Lee Curtis, the first film did a similar thing to what Terminator 2 did. Was it basically turned Jamie Lee Curtis's character into this like traumatized PTSD, but, you know, she'd guns all over her house, and she was basically just spent the last 40 years waiting for Michael Myers to come back. Like, you know, that's how a sequel should be done in my mind. That's how a remake should do, is that it interacts with the original and changes what you thought of the first one or thought of the original, and then brings it into a more kind of modern setting, or at least changes it with modern sensibilities. Like, and I'm not saying necessarily, like, you know, it has to fit, like, you know, there has to be, you know, modern sensibilities. I just mean perspective, like a new perspective on it. Like,
that kind of brings me to Roadhouse. Should that have been remade?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh God.
Like, why is that being remade?
Exactly. Egg fucking exactly. Why? Why did that need to be, like, in at what point did anyone say, you know what, actually, we need to go back? Like, it did absolutely nothing. There was nothing, like, I'm not saying the original one was, I mean, the original one was a cult classic. It clearly was.
It's for its time, isn't it?
For, exactly, yes, for its time. And, you know, Patrick Swayze at the time was a bit of stunt casting, because, you know, he was coming off the back of, like, Dirty Dancing, and he was about to go on and do Ghosts and stuff like that. He was kind of known as a bit of a pretty boy.
Yeah.
You know, and like, the idea of him playing a bouncer was kind of ridiculous. And then, of course, like, you know, the whole thing was, you know, he had a degree in philosophy and, you know, all that sort of jazz. But really, like, it was just a kind of an okay film that just gained a second life through, you know, being on telly all the time, or, you know, being a cheap video rental and stuff like that. It wasn't this like cultural phenomenon that demanded a remake. And when you watch the new version of it, you can tell that it's just like, we're going to take the name, and we're going to take the fact that it's a bouncer, and that's it, and we're just going to craft a whole new thing around it. And like, you know, Conor McGregor, I know he could fold me up just by looking at me, but he can't act his way out of a paper bag. And Jake Gyllenhaal, like, I don't know what's going on with him, but like, he's clearly in some weird part of his career where he doesn't really know where he's going or what he's doing anymore. Because like, you think back to, you know, Donnie Darko, or even Demolition, or you know, like, he's a good actor. So
yeah,
it's like,
he is genuinely a good actor. Was it Nightcrawler? Was that the one? I think.
Yeah, Nightcrawler. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant film. Like, to call back, the fact that that didn't even get a look in at the Oscars, that's another film that was like, this is a brilliant film. the fact that this isn't being completely ignored by the Oscars, it's too weird, it's too violent, it's too cynical. That's exactly why the Oscars are ignoring it, even though it's a great, great film. Like,
yeah, but I don't know. I watched Roadhouse as well, lads, and I'd like to think somewhere, right, when they decided to cast McGregor in this role, somewhere, you know, they went, right, okay, grand, let's see what he can do. And about maybe a half day in, they went, we're just going to have to make his character Irish, aren't we? That accent isn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
Oh my God, man. It just, you can't turn it off. You
don't know.
Like, there's some, that, like, look, throughout Hollywood, we've had bad accents in movies, and we've had bad, you know, but like, Jesus, you just, it's not avoiding it. And I don't think he'll be getting many calls off the back of that one anyway.
Do you know what? You say that, I wouldn't be surprised if he did. I wouldn't be surprised if he did, because, like, I mean, it was a huge hit for Amazon Prime. Apparently, it was like their most watched film of the year. And, you know, like, he was, I mean, this isn't his first brush with Hollywood. Like, he was originally supposed to be in, The Predator. There was a new version of The Predator made not too long ago. Not the one, Prey, one before that. And he dropped out of it at the last minute, seemingly. And I kind of think he would have been better in that than he would have been in this.
Yeah.
Because his character basically was kind of like a mute, for lack of a better word. He only had like a couple of lines in it. And I think, and I remember watching The Predator, and the role was actually played by Alfie Allen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And weirdly, Alfie Allen decided to play it with an Irish accent. And I was watching it and thinking, yeah, I can see why they wrote this for Conor McGregor, but by Jesus, Alfie Allen is no replacement for him, like, you know?
Yeah, it's...
That's mental, isn't it? Like, the whole thing, like, if I see a remake on a trailer or on the TV or something like that, I have no enthusiasm to watch a remake.
Yeah.
None at all.
See, for me, it really depends. It's really going to depend on who's in it, right? Because there's certain actors that no matter what they do, and actresses or whatever, like, no matter what they do, I'll watch it just because I love that. Like Ben Affleck for me, right? I will watch fucking anything with Ben Affleck in it. And I think... I think Kevin Smith once famously said, if they remade Jaws and Ben Affleck was the shark, I'd still watch it. And I completely I just love Affleck. And I just, so, yeah, I don't know. I'm with you to a large extent. Like, most remakes don't need to be remade, kind of thing. But it really depends on who's in them for me, where I'd be like, you know what? Okay, I'm not saying it. Just because.
Okay, I'm going to put you to the test now, Danny. Have you seen that J-Lo movie, that J-Lo dancing musical movie? Because he's in that.
No, I haven't seen that
one. There you go.
I'm going along with the Duke and WrestleMania this weekend. I'll give that a look and I'll come back to you. I'm sure, because if even if Affleck's only on screen for 30 seconds, surely it's a 10 out of 10. Like.
Do you know what? I'm going to hold you to that, Graham. You're going to be a witness now. I want you to come back now and tell me if it's still a 10 out of 10 after that.
Honestly, if I watch this now and, you know, afterwards it ruins Affleck for me and I can't watch The Town, but that upset me.
I won't ruin The Town for you. No, it's not gonna ruin any of that, but it's just a ball of shit. Like, it's just a ball of shit.
Yeah,
who's your Ben Affleck, Brian?
Who's my Ben Affleck? Oh, that's a good question. I honestly don't know. I don't know, to be honest.
So many, like, the Irish are doing really good lately, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's silly. Like, I mean, it really is. Like, I mean, Colin Farrell was, I think he did an interview earlier this week, and he was basically, it's saying what we know already, which is, like, for a population of 5-6 million people, like, we are punching way over our weight in entertainment and popular culture. Like, and I think the fact that we're able to do that in spite of, you know, completely, you know, no support or very, very little support, like, from the government, just a really hostile environment for people in creative industries in Ireland, like, I mean, in all industries, like, but especially in creative industries, like, the fact that we're still able to do it. Like, the thing I always go to is, what would we be like if people in government, and if there were policies in place that actually gave a shit and actually did help people and actually did encourage this as a viable industry? Do you know what I mean? Where would we be then, like, you know?
It's like that in a lot of industries, isn't it?
You're right, yeah.
And especially the arts, though, because I mean, look at the payback with the arts. You know,
yeah.
If actors or whatever are getting recognized, or if movies are being filmed here, like,
yeah.
You know, one of my favorite actors recently has been when I say favorite actors, I just mean when I watched The Banshees of Inisherin. Like, I enjoyed that. My dad's criticism, which I thought was quite fair, was that he felt it was kind of made perhaps for an American market.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
And I thought that was fair, but it didn't really turn me off it as such. Like, I thought Kerry Condon in that movie was just brilliant, I thought.
Isn't she, yeah?
There was a series made years ago by, I think it was HBO and BBC, Rome.
Yeah,
that's probably 20 years ago, I'd say. She was
Kerry. Oh, she was in that, yeah. That was what, 2007 or something?
Was it? Maybe it was actually about that, yeah. But, she's a brilliant, brilliant actress, yeah.
But we've got Kerry Condon, Saoirse Ronan, we've got like Paul Mescal, Andrew Scott, Barry Keoghan. I mean, the list goes on, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, and this is the thing, like, even leaving aside actors, like, I mean, writers and stuff like that. Like, look what Aislinn B is doing. Look what Sharon Horgan is doing. Directors like Lenny Abrahamson. The director who did Evil Dead Rise. I'm forgetting his name now, but and it's not even just, you know, your kind of like prestige dramas and stuff like that. Like, there was a brilliant film last year called Lola. That was this like found footage sci-fi film that was absolutely brilliant, and I've been raving about it to anyone that would watch it. Like, it's so, so good. But yeah, like, I think the whole reason why we do so well, I think, is just because we have to be more ingenious. Do you know that sort of way? We have to work with so little. And this kind of ties into what we were talking about earlier about like kind of like Netflix and there being so much choice or whatever. When I believe in everything, I think less is more. I think, like, you know, during the pandemic and all the lockdowns and stuff like that, when the cinemas were closed and, you know, studios weren't able to produce films or whatever, people had to go back and watch old TV shows that they had kind of said like, oh, I should watch that. And I've been meaning to watch it for years and I never got around to it. And then people were then able to appreciate it, you know, that sort of way.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Big time.
That's the complete, I completely agree in terms of, you know, that less is more sentiment.
Yeah.
You know, like, to kind of almost go full circle to the point that was made earlier when we were chatting, is that whole thing of, it, you know, seasons do feel sometimes that they are, you know, a couple episodes too long.
Yeah.
Many movies these days end somewhere in the 90 minutes to an hour or the 2 hour window. They don't. They all seem to rumble on for 2.5-3 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, completely. Yeah. And this is it. Like, I think it's like, you know, the fact that we live in a time now where, like I was saying, like, of just endless options of entertainment and stuff like that, like, less is more is, I think, when you see something that's only 4 episodes long, or if you see a film that's 90 minutes long, like, whereas before you'd probably think, oh, I bet you that's shit. Oh, it's only 90 minutes long, I bet you that's shit. Now I go into it, I'm thinking, right, if that's 90 minutes, that's got something. That's because, you know, they're working in a tight time frame. There's no messing around. There's no kind of, there's not an ounce of fat on it. Yeah. And even in like 3-part or 4-part miniseries and stuff like that, you're thinking, okay, they are going to cover a lot of ground here. So I can't watch this passively. I can't watch this with a phone in my hand and just kind of, you know, flick up every now and then and kind of half-arsedly watch it. I have to give it my full attention, you know?
Absolutely. And you mentioned Sharon Horgan there and Aislinn B. Like when and I can't believe I forgot them, but when you mentioned there, I was distinctly remember Catastrophe being, it stopped at a good time. It was perfect length. Ashley and B as well, This Way Up, that was absolutely brilliant. And I don't know if that, is that definitely stopped This Way Up, or is there a new series expected?
I would say it stopped, because I think she's now basically going to be huge in the next year, I would say.
Except for the Home Alone movie she did.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, I felt bad for her. I felt bad, like, as a fellow Kildare person, like, my sympathy is straight to my own people. Like, her and Paul Mescal, like, I have a lot of sympathy when they make a dud, like, you know? But, Jesus, that Paul. But the Home Alone thing. But to be fair, though, it hasn't done her any harm. Like, you know, that absolutely, kind of way. Like, it's kind of mentioned almost as the butt of a joke. Like, and I'd say, I get the sense she kind of knew herself it was a bit shit. Like,
yeah, but she's a working actress and writer, so it's a job at the end of the day, isn't it?
Exactly. This is it. Like, and you have good days and your bad days. Like,
even Bad Sisters, that was brilliant.
That was fantastic. Yeah,
and I love the way Sharon is kind of bringing it back home. You know, to be. I know it's set in Ireland, but still, like, all those little things are good.
No, definitely. Yeah, and the fact that it was like, you know, you had people like fucking Kim Kardashian and stuff like that talking about normal people. Like, I mean, it's always heartening to see that level of interaction with, you know, stuff that you and I and anyone listening to this, but that we can so easily relate to and recognize and understand. Like, it gives it a sense of, it makes it valid. Like, do you know that kind of way? It validates it, like, I think, which is always a good thing, you know?
Brian, I'm conscious of time because we need to let you shoot off, but before we let you go, obviously people can check out entertainment.ie to see more of your reviews and hear more of your recommendations and all that kind of thing, but is there anything coming up this year that people should be watching out for?
Yes, and it's why I have to shoot off. Fallout is this new TV series that's coming to Prime Video. I am in the middle of watching the first 4 episodes of it. I think the embargo will be up by the time this episode goes out. So I'm gonna choose my words carefully, except to say I'm really enjoying it. And yeah, if you played the video game series, it's
the video game.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Like, they really got it. They really, really got it. Like, they got it so right. I'm really, really chuffed. Like, it's really, really good. Like, and I'm interviewing Kyle MacLachlan and Walton Goggins tomorrow. So, but yeah, no, they got it right. Like, I'm so chuffed. Like, they really, really got it right.
Lovely, lovely. Looking forward to that myself, because I was a fan of the computer game. So, and I think that's like some of those adaptations over the years have kind of been hit and miss, like,
Jesus, no, they've been more, no, you're being generous, they've been more.
like Uncharted, as much as I want to like it just, you know what I mean, and then what was the, Michael Fassbender was in it, I can't remember.
Assassin's Creed, that was poor, Jesus, yeah.
That was wank. But anyway, we can talk about that all another time. Brian, thank you very much for your
time. Brian, thanks so much.
And we will continue to keep a watch line of reviews so that we get pointed towards decent stuff, including the Jennifer Lopez dance movie featuring Ben Affleck.
I want to hear about that.
Brian Lloyd, thank you very much, man.
Thanks so much, Brian.
Thanks a lot.
Big, massive, huge, gorgeous thank you to Brian Lloyd, entertainment.ie, movie review editor and just all round good guy there.
You could have talked for ages there, couldn't you? Because
of course you could. It's just such a juicy little gorgeous topic to be talking about. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I remember when I lived in Australia, do you know what I used to get every Friday? Not every Friday, that'd be a lie, but it would be once a month because it was only a monthly issue. Empire. I used to always get an Empire. What did you say? I didn't even hear you. What did you say?
What did you know they used to get every Friday? It's a shift and a hand shandy.
I didn't even hear you. I just heard a shibbity shibbity shit.
Sorry.
Monthly. I used to get Empire magazine. I used to love Empire.
Yeah. I haven't bought a magazine in years now, but I used to love Empire, and occasionally I would have bought NME for the music.
Yeah. My dad used to always buy me as a kid Power Slam. It was an insider kind of, that and Pro Wrestling Illustrated he used to get me. I think that was, both of them were monthly, so he used to get me them monthly. Both Insider, professional wrestling magazines. But yeah, I haven't bought a magazine in, can't remember.
Yeah, mad, isn't it? But
Empire used to be great. They used to do like special edition, like hologram covers and stuff, depending on what movie that was coming out.
Yeah.
They were deadly. Jesus, are magazines still going? Yeah.
Yeah, well, they're definitely still going, Graham. Yeah, I don't think they're probably as popular as they once were. I used to get PlayStation magazines. You used to get free PlayStation demo games.
Remember that, the demos?
You'd only get like the first level or the first two levels or whatever.
Yeah.
Loving it, man. You know what I mean? So that's
was that name of that PlayStation magazine? Was it literally PlayStation magazine?
Might have been, yeah, just PlayStation magazine. I'm sure there was there Loaded or something like that as well?
What was the... I remember Loaded, yeah, but I got a demo before. Abe's Odyssey, yeah.
Oh my God, man, right. Quick bit of Murray family history for you, right?
Remember Abe's Odyssey? Abe's. I bought a PlayStation magazine one time and that was the free demo.
Me and John O'Murray used to look, there was Abe's Odyssey and then there was a sequel, Abe's Exodus, right? Me and John O'Murray played them for hours. Because you could make them fart, you could make them belch, you could make them do things, make them make that noise for some reason, right? Loved it. Two of us loved it. About around Christmas, maybe just before Christmas or whatever, on the PS5, every so often, you get a free, like if you're signed up to the PlayStation monthly, right? You get access to free games, including PlayStation Classics. And what was the PlayStation Classic, Merrill?
Abe's Odyssey.
Abe's Odyssey. Oh, man.
It hasn't been remade or anything, has it?
No. It's still very much in its original glory. And it should be. It should, much to the point that we had with Brian about remakes. There's no need.
No, you're right. That, but yeah, Abe's Odyssey. That magazine, that brought back a big nostalgia buzz there.
Yeah,
you used to always get that magazine. And think you were great because you were getting a free game when actually it was only a demo.
Deadly. And it cost like a fiver or something.
Yeah.
Before we finish up this week, right, so you have to watch Mrs. Hardest Goes to Paris, right?
Yeah, absolutely, it's on the list. Yeah,
I have to watch The Duke and I have to watch that Jennifer Lopez dancing film, which I need to go and find on Amazon.
I know you're going to love that though.
Then I'm going to give our listeners some homework as well.
All right,
and I'm going to highly recommend, we didn't get to talk to Brian about this and I'd love to, but Shrinking. With Jason Segel
and Harrison Ford. I'm three, four episodes in, and it's really good.
It's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Harrison Ford is brilliant in it,
and it's really good.
The other one, if you haven't watched Mrs. Hardest Goes to Paris, do join Merrow, have a watch along, right? But the other one I'm going to watch from a couple of years old now, absolutely brilliant film with Scarlett Johansson, Sam Worthington, and. Can't remember the other guy's name. Jojo Rabbit.
Oh yeah, I didn't see it, but yeah, I know it.
Absolutely brilliant film.
Deadly. Watched the recent films. I watched were Wonka and American Fiction.
I haven't watched American Fiction yet, but I loved Wonka. Brilliant.
I really enjoyed Wonka. Yeah, I have to say, I really enjoyed it. Thumbs up for me, definitely.
We should just turn this podcast, we're going 9 years, man. I think we should just turn it into a movies podcast now.
Absolutely. Let's do movies every week.
Movies and TV every week. That's, you know what I mean?
I'd love that. Brian's so lucky and he's a brilliant reviewer as well. But to have that as your job would be great, wouldn't it? Just to talk about movies and go off to junkets and premier. Watch TV shows and premieres and interview actors. Class.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
We'll leave it to him though, because he's the professional.
Look, he is. He's good at it, and we'd just be two young pretenders.
Exactly. Chancers. I love the way you said young there.
Absolutely, Graham. Sure, you're looking not a day over 30.
Thank you.
If people want to listen to previous episodes of this, including where we probably talk about movies and films and all that, and we talk about our Netflix recommendations way back when, how and where can they do so?
They can go to WTSpod.com. Or they can go to any podcast provider and search WTS Pod. You can get us everywhere and anywhere you can get a podcast. Spotify, Podcast Republic, Apple Podcast, anywhere, everywhere. Just go anywhere you can get us. Search WTS Pod. We're on Twitter at WTS Pod, and he's at Andrew Murray and I'm at Merrigan Mania.
Exactly. Check out entertainment.ie for Brian Lloyd and his movie and TV recommendations and reviews. Mero, until next week, Mahara.
Clear eyes.
Full hearts.
Can't lose.